Flowers for Algernon, Disc 3.
Progress Report 11. May 1st. Why haven't I ever noticed how beautiful Alice Kinnean is? She has pigeon-soft brown eyes and feathery brown hair down to the hollow of her neck. When she smiles, her full lips look as if she's pouting. We went to a movie and then to dinner. I didn't see much of the first picture because I was too conscious of her sitting next to me. Twice, her bare arm touched mine on the armrest, and both times the fear that she would become annoyed made me pull back. All I could think about was her soft skin just inches away. Then I saw, two rows ahead of us, a young man with his arm around his girl, and I wanted to put my arm around Miss Kinnean. Terrifying! But if I did it slowly, first resting my arm on the back of her seat, moving up inch by inch to rest near her shoulders and the back of her neck, casually, I didn't dare. The best I could do was rest my elbow on the back of her seat, but by the time I got there, I had to shift position to wipe the perspiration off my face and neck. Once, her leg accidentally brushed against mine. It became such an ordeal, so painful, that I forced myself to take my mind off her. The first picture had been a war film, and all I caught was the ending where the GI goes back to Europe to marry the woman who saved his life. The second picture interested me. A psychological film about a man and a woman apparently in love but actually destroying each other. Everything suggests that the man is going to kill his wife, but at the last moment, something she screams out in a nightmare makes him recall something that happened to him during his childhood. The sudden memory shows him that his hatred is really directed at a depraved governess who had terrified him with frightening stories and left a flaw in his personality. Excited at discovering this, he cries out with joy so that his wife awakens. He takes her in his arms, and the implication is that all his problems have been solved. It was pat and cheap, and I must have shown my anger, because Alice wanted to know what was wrong. "It's a lie," I explained as we walked out into the lobby. "Things just don't happen that way." "Of course not," she laughed. "It's a world of make-believe." "Oh no, that's no answer," I insisted. "Even in the world of make-believe, there have to be rules. The parts have to be consistent and belong together. This kind of picture is a lie. Things are forced to fit because the writer or the director or somebody wanted something in that didn't belong. And it doesn't feel right." She looked at me thoughtfully as we walked out into the bright, dazzling night lights of Times Square. "You're coming along fast." "I'm confused. I don't know what I know anymore." "Never mind that," she insisted. "You're beginning to see and understand things." She waved her hand to take in all of the neon and glitter around us as we crossed over to 7th Avenue. "You're beginning to see what's behind the surface of things. What you say about the parts having to belong together, that was a pretty good insight." "Oh, come on now. I don't feel as if I'm accomplishing anything. I don't understand about myself or my past. I don't even know where my parents are or what they look like. Do you know that when I see them in a flash of memory or in a dream, the faces are a blur? I want to see their expressions. I can't understand what's going on unless I can see their faces." "Charlie, calm down." People were turning to stare. She slipped her arm through mine and pulled me close to restrain me. "Be patient. Don't forget, you're accomplishing in weeks what takes others a lifetime. You're a giant sponge soaking in knowledge. Soon you'll begin to connect things up, and you'll see how all the different worlds of learning are related. All the levels, Charlie, like steps on a giant ladder. And you'll climb higher and higher to see more and more of the world around you."